So we left off last time towards the end of a very long chapter, a very long perek, perek tes, chapter 9 in Sefer Shoftim. And the pasuk that we're up to is pasuk memvav. And this perek has been probably from the most challenging, if not the most challenging perek that we've done until now, basically due to the fact that we've had a lot of ups and downs in terms of Jewish history. But in this perek, all of the down involves a type of civil war, and it's violence of Jew against Jew, which, unfortunately, from a Tanakh perspective, this is not the last time that such a thing occurs. Specifically, for those of us who learned Sefer Malachim together and have a knowledge of Sefer Malachim and Divrei Hayamim, that there was there was definitely a good number of times where Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda actually went to the battlefield. For whatever reason, it's described more so in Divrei Hayamim than in Sefer Malachim. But this is the first time, because we don't really have it. Sefer Yehoshua sails pretty smoothly, besides the occurrence at Ai, when one person had gone against the edict of Yehoshua, and the nation as itself had a little bit of a down. This is probably the first time that there's infighting. And that it's Avimelech who is taking back, taking some revenge against the people of Shechem, who were his distant relatives and who had launched him as being king. But in recent times, right after 3 years of him ruling, they've been rebellious, and he has been chasing after them. And we have to remember this all goes back to a long speech that we dealt with two times ago and last time, the speech of Yosam, who is the surviving member of the sons of Gideon, and that he, although he's not a Navi, he predicts that there's going to be a downfall and how the people of Shechem, the fire is going to come out from this king, this Avimelech, and it's going to go towards the inhabitants of Shechem and Baal Bris, and that the fire is going to go from them and consume Avimelech. And they're both going to kind of be destroyed and paid back for their actions in a Mida Keneged Mida fashion. And what we had read last time, the last few psukim, was Avimelech coming against Shechem, destroying the city. And we saw even this severe language that Pasuk Mem Hei concluded with of Vayizra Eha Melech, that he sowed the fields with salt, almost saying that you're not going to be able to use this land, and no one's going to be able to use this land for the foreseeable future. So we're continuing this horrific story. It's only going to go on for, 10, 12 more psukim. And then we're going to have one small little bright spot. Again, the small little bright spot for us will only last for a few psukim, but it will last for a good amount of years, which we'll see, which is what we constantly need to take comfort from, is that the bad times, while they spend a lot of psukim, a lot of real estate in Tanakh talking about it, it doesn't actually take up a lot of time in history relative to the years of peace. So we're continuing with Pasuk Mem Vav. Vayishme'u kol ba'alei migdal Shechem. All of the inhabitants of Migdal Shechem, a place that we have not heard until now, and Migdal is a tower. There was some area, perhaps as the Mefarshim explained, it's somewhat outside the city, where they had heard, meaning they had heard that the regular inhabitants of Shechem had been destroyed by Avimelech. So they hear this, Vayavo el Tziriach Beis El Bris. They come to Tziriach Beis El Bris. Now Beis El Bris, we are familiar with, this was one of the other towns that had linked up with Shechem originally to give the mandate of leadership when requested by Avimelech, but then they gave Avimelech the money, they gave him the power to go ahead and accomplish what he would accomplish, and they're the first ones to crown him as king. So they went to the Tzriach. So what is a Tzriach? So the Arts Girl translates a Tzriach as a citadel. It's a fancy word, right? Because it's saying Migdal, they translate as tower, and Tzriach is a citadel. So the Metzudos Tzion says it's a Migdal Gvoa. It's basically a large or a very high tower, which maybe is what I didn't look up the Webster definition of what is a citadel, or what is a citadel versus a tower, right? If you came to someone's citadel and you called it a tower, would they be insulted? I remember Lahavdil, my grandmother, She used to get upset if we said that she went, because she lived in England, that she came to America, which was a big deal, and she came by ship. But she would be very insulted if we said she came by boat. Because it wasn't a boat. A boat is something you can row. She came by ship. And that there was, you know, it was an insult. And so that could be some type of relate that they ran from Migdal to a Migdal that was near Shechem to a Tzriach, to some type of citadel. And the Mitzvah of Tzion quotes some other places in Tanakh, in Sefer Yeshaya, where this word is used. Migdal is definitely more common than Tzriach. But they ran to this citadel, assuming that by running there they would be safe from Avimelech. And Avimelech seems to have, he has some type of list. He has some type of list of who he needs to take out. Meaning, there were the Pasuk had described a rebelliousness among certain individuals coming from these areas. He's currently the ruler of, in the language of Tanakh, he is the, right, it used the language of, back in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Chav Beis, it said, Vayasar Avimelech al Yisrael. He's being described as leading over Israel, which could very well be, means all of Israel. There's some degree of naysayers, of people who are rebelling, and that's who's on his list. So Pasuk Mem Zayin, Vayugad la Avimelech. It was told to Avimelech, Ki eskapsu kol ba'alei migdal Shechem, that all of the ba'alei Hashchem, all these individuals who are from the Migdal Shechem, so they're from perhaps his initial list of who he needs to take out, meaning the people of Shechem, that they have gathered, and presumably this also, as we'll see, it means where they have gathered. Who is doing the telling to Avimelech? So at this point, there are probably countless individuals, we don't know their name, they have every incentive to get on the good side of Avimelech. If at this point, we, the reader of Tanakh, and we kind of know the end of the story based on how it was presented to us, that it was first the one surviving son of Gideon had predicted that there's going to be a mutual destruction, that they are that Avimelech is going to destroy them, and they will destroy Avimelech. So we kind of know the ending, that Avimelech is not walking out of this time period successful, alive, v'chule, but they don't know that. And so anyone who's living at the time, who maybe was even, you know, on that, I mean, maybe they had rebelled against him, but they have every reason to try. Right now, it looks like Avimelech is winning, and he's going to continue to win. He's going to continue to serve as leader. So it's almost like Vayugad l'Avimelech happens to be throughout Tanakh. We constantly see people, almost in a certain state, you'd say tattletaling. What's truly remarkable in Sefer Shmuel is that throughout all the months that David HaMelech is on the run from Shaul, he's constantly being, his location is constantly being told to Shaul. And it's like, who exactly are, and sometimes it's people who David thinks are going to be his friend, and sometimes, you know, as much as David tries to hide, Shaul seems to know exactly where he is. Obviously, he still doesn't get to him. And so, Vayugad l'Avimelech, we don't necessarily know who, but it's understandable that everyone would be trying to ingratiate themselves with Avimelech to tell him what he wants to know, and this is what he wants to know. And presumably, they also taught, say, the location, as the flow of the Pesukim continues in Pasuk Memchas. Vayal Avimelech Har Salmon. Avimelech went up to Har Salmon, the Mount of Salmon. Hu v'chol ha'am asher ito, he and everyone who is with him. From the continuation of what's going to happen, he has arrived at this Tzriach Beis El Bris. He has arrived where all the people are hiding. A little bit strange that in one pasuk it's described as the Tzriach, the citadel of Beis El Bris, and then the location is, in further clarification, or maybe from just a different description, it's described as Har Salmon. Presumably, those are all one and the same. That Har Salmon is maybe the mountain, and on there was this citadel of the Beis Elbris, perhaps. V'chol ha'am, so he comes. Who v'chol ha'am asher ito? He and all of his men. He and his army. Vayikach Avimelech es HaKardumos. Avimelech takes a garzan, an axe. That's how the Mitzvah Tzion defines the word karduma. a word found elsewhere in Tanakh as well. Biado, he takes an axe in his hand. It does seem to be in plural. He takes axes. Even though it's part of my name, I can't say that I'm so familiar with using. I believe you only use one at a time to do what he's going to do, but he is going to be encouraging and involving those who are with him to use an axe as well, and maybe that's why he has it in plural. He's not actually going to use it, but he will use one, and he will have available for others. So he takes an axe in his hand, plural. Vayichros sochas etzim. He cuts down sochas etzim. Metzudas Tzion defines sochas as anaf gadol, a very large branch. Not as common of a word, right? Vayichros etzim, that would have been, you know, more common. It's maybe trying to highlight the size of it, and that's why this unique word of sochat, as we'll see, it's used in one other context, in singular, it's socho. So he cuts down a large wooden branch, vayisa eha, and he carries it, vayasam al shechmo, and he places it upon his shoulder. Vayomer Elo'am Asher Imo, and he says to the people who are together with him, Mari'isem Asisi Maharu Asu Chamoni. That which you see that I have done, hurry up and do for yourself. Which is a little bit strange that he doesn't just give a command, cut down some branches, carry, you know, it almost sounds a little poetic. That which you see me do, you should do. I didn't see any significance in terms of Rashi, Radach, Metzudas David, in terms of what's the significance of how he's inviting them to do the same thing that he is doing. Is there some type, you know, does he wanna remain a little bit cryptic about what he's doing? I don't necessarily know why. Also, because he's very open with what he actually did, and he's saying copy and paste, do what I did, whatever you saw me do, which means take an axe, cut a large branch, carry it on your shoulder, and carry it. Pasuk mem test. Vayichrusu gam kol ha'am. So all of the people who are with him, his army, they also cut down ish socho, a man, each person cut down a branch. The Vayelchu Acharei Avimelech, they went after and they followed Avimelech. It happens to be that the rabbinically there's a place referred to as Socho in the Mishnah, but it's spelled with a Samach, and as far as I know, it's a location as opposed to here Ish Socho. It's just fascinating that the same, that'd be a good trivia. Name two places in Torah Shebechsav and Torah Shebaalpeh that the phrase ish socho is used, and it's actually very different meanings. So here we have in the pasuk, it means each person took their branch. I think it's in Pirkei Avos that one of the Tanoim is described as ish socho. He was a man, he came from socho. Vayelchu achar Avimelech, they follow after Avimelech. Vayasimu al hatzriach, and they place it. Literal translation we would say is on the citadel. The more likely translation, it means on, meaning next to. And also a language that we have seen before in Tanakh, that al can also mean against. And, you know, when you have a citadel, when you have a tower of people that are basically surrounded on all sides, and he's cutting down wood, and he's having everyone cut down large branches of wood, and he's encircling, right? Vayasimu alatzriach, you kind of unfortunately know what's coming next. Vayatzisu alehem es atzriach ba'esh, and he set the citadel on fire. I mean, these branches on the outside were to get the fire started and get the fire going. Vayamusu gam kol anshe migdal Shechem, all of the inhabitants of the Tower of Shechem that had moved to this location, ke'elef ish v'isha, about 1,000 men and women were killed by Avimelech. Again, he has it out for them because he's considering them to be rebellious against him. When it says ke'elef ish v'isha, does it just mean a lot of people? And it's a little bit of an exaggeration. Is it the right? We clearly have to say that it's not an exact count because it says ke elefish. And that, you know, presumably that would be known. Either you would say, you know, Shmuel Hanavi's writing the Sefer hundreds of years later, and he has Nevuah, he has Ruach HaKodesh, so he knows what happened. Or that there was some knowledge of how many people went in. When you know how many people went in, right, we have, you know, Lahavdil there, I think there's some type of knowledge in the historical accounting on how many people were at Masada when they committed that communal act of taking each other's lives as opposed to giving themselves up to the Romans. People knew how many people went there, so we know how many people went there, and you know if there are no survivors, then you could know approximately the number, and so it's known. And so from Avimelech's perspective, it seems that he's just checking off the list, that he got the people of actual Shechem, and now he even was successful in accomplishing wiping off Migdal Shechem, as horrific as this is. And it's not the only time in Tanakh that model is used of surrounding a structure and lighting fire to the structure. It's used in Sefer Malachim. There was a very short the king in Malachim who gets the double asterisk on the art scroll chart. I think his name was Zimri. He was only king for 7 days. Right? You have like the guy who gets the asterisk. They're king for a few months, and when it says three, it's 3 months. I think one of the sons of Yoshio at the end. Right at the end of Bayis Rishon was king. Just one of them was king just for a few months, and then there's Zimri who's king for seven, but it's 7 days. And the way that Zimri was assassinated was the next king who was overthrowing him was Omri, the father of Achav, surrounded the palace with the palace, burned it on the outside, closed it in, and burnt anyone who was on the inside, including the king. So it's not. You know, it's not uncommon meaning it's done at different times in Tanakh, and from a historical perspective, it was also a form outside of Tanakh. It was a form of dealing with an enemy that you surround by using fire. Why he chose fire, not necessarily clear. What we are going to see in the next few psukim, we're going to be shifting towards, right, we've kind of had everyone who needed to get their due almost has gotten it, but Avimelech still has to get what's coming to him. There is going to be some Mida, Keneged Mida aspect to Avimelech. I don't know if we can necessarily read that into the inhabitants of Migdal Shechem being put to death via fire. Pasuk Nun. Vayelach Avimelech el Tevetz. Avimelech goes to a place called Tevetz. Vayichan b'tevetz, he encamps in Tevetz, vayilkada, and he also conquers it. He conquers it, which is a little bit strange that we hear the word vayilkada, that he conquers it, because he's currently the pseudo-king. He's currently the leader of all of Eretz Yisrael. What does it mean that he conquers it? It must mean that this was, and this is how the Mefarshim seem to understand it, that this was also a location where the last remnants of those who were rebelling against him were located. Even we had not heard of this place, we had not heard of Tevetz before. We had heard of Shechem, we heard of Beis El Bris. But that's what, so Vayil Kedah, he captures it in the sense that he's putting his control over it to retake control. Pasuk Nun Aleph. Umigdal Oz Haya Besochair. Now here there was a Migdal Oz. Migdal Oz would translate as a strong tower. The Mitzudos Tion defines it as a Migdal Chazak. So if you want a homework assignment, you have to figure out what's the hierarchy. Migdal. Then there's Tsriach. Is a Migdal Oz better than a tzriach, or is it just better than a migdal? Now, obviously, there's no real nafgamina, there's no real practical difference. But it is a little bit interesting that in the same perek, we have three different terms for a tower when there's no real difference for you and I. A tower is a tower. But here in Tevetz, there's a migdal oz, haya besocha ir, in the midst of the city. Vayinusu shama kol anashim v'anashim v'chol ba'alei ha'ir. So everyone, all of the men, all of the women, Kol Balei Ha'ir, all of the inhabitants of this city of Tevetz, they run to the Migdal Oz, to the tower, the stronghold tower. Vayizgeru ba'adam, they locked themselves in. Vayalu al gag ha'migdal, and they went up to the roof of the tower. Now, did they know what happened in the past? In the recent past, we have no idea. This does not seem to be a good idea. Meaning, this is the track record is running into the tower against Avimelech is not going to end. Now, you might say they had no choice. They had no choice. There was no other normal, maybe another option to run. So this is where they ran. The thinking being that it was their best chance. It was their best chance to survive. Pasuk Nun Beis. Vayava Avimelech ad Amigdal. So Avimelech comes to the Migdal. Vayilachim bo. Vayilachim bo, we would translate as he went to war against it. Vayigash ad Pesach Amigdal. L'sarfo be'esh. And he came close. He approached the opening of the tower. L'sarfo be'esh, to burn it with fire. It sounds similar to what he tried before. Now, how do we really understand the phrase vayilachem bo, that he waged war with it? I'm not 100% sure. Meaning, what we would expect is that the same way that he was successful against tower number one, or what we call the tzriach, the citadel. So why wouldn't he do the same thing? It didn't say by the tzriach that he was vayilachem bo, that he waged war against it. It said he came up with a plan. The plan was fire. He cut down a big branch. He told all of his soldiers, cut down big branches. He surrounded the citadel, and he lit the match. And then he let the fire do the milchama, do the war for him. Here we hear in advance of a fire plan is some aspect of vayilachem bo, that he needs to do some type of battle against it. It could be, and maybe you can make an argument that this maybe shows us that a Migdal Oz maybe is even more intense, or it's more of a stronghold than a Tzriach, in the sense that there was some hurdle that he had to overcome first before he'd gain access.
So
whether it was,
could it have been built out of stone where the first one was built out of wood?
Could it be a different material? It definitely could be a different material, in the sense that maybe the second one was stone, but he's still coming to try to burn it. They're still going to try to burn it.
Maybe
and there is
people at like stations.
Right, so Yailachim Bo, maybe there was some type of physical defense in front of
that he had
He had to kind of get through, you know, maybe, you know, we'd call it level one of the defense around this Migdal Oz, and then he approached it with fire. As far as my knowledge of Tanakh, which is really, really very small, this may be the first time that the phrase Migdal Oz is being used. It would be interesting to know that there is in Gush Etzion today, one of the smaller, right, we're all very familiar with like Efrat and Alon Shvut, which are the bigger neighborhoods in Gush Etzion. There's a smaller neighborhood where there's a prominent girls yeshiva, and the neighborhood's called Migdal Oz, and I think the yeshiva's name is similar, Migdal Oz. Maybe it has an official name of Migdal Oz, but like the same way we call the Gush Yeshiva, we call it Har. The official name is Har Etzion, but everyone just calls it the Gush because it's in the Gush. So it's kind of the girls' edition of that. So right here, there's nothing positive about Migdal Oz. It'd be interesting to ask the Migdal Oz people, is there, and I don't think it's necessarily the Yeshiva, it's probably the people who started that little neighborhood that's off the side of Efrat. Are there other places in Tanakh where it's like more of a positive connotation to the word Migdal Oz? I guess you have two homework assignments. There you go. So that's the plan. The plan is Lasarfo, the plan is to burn it, exactly like he did. Pasuk Nun Gimel. Vatashlech Isha Achas, Pelach Rechev al Rosh Avimelech. One, Vatashlech Isha Achas. One woman throws Pelach Rechev. A pelach rechev, which is described in the translation, we'll see it through the lens of the Mitzvah Sion, as the upper millstone, al rosh avimelech, on the head of avimelech, vataritz es Gulgalto, it struck him in the head, in the sense that it not just struck him, that taritz is a language of almost like an intense blow, which maybe even penetrated a little bit with this stone, making a real serious head injury. As we're about to see, there's still some, you know, we would maybe think with such a blow to the head that he wouldn't be conscious. But we're seeing in the next pasuk that he was. What's interesting is that it doesn't appear necessarily that she was trying to kill him. It just says that she, now, there's a lot that if you can see someone trying to set fire to a tower, and you could be trying to throw down anything and everything. This is clearly not a classic weapon, although if you're on the top of a tower and you got people underneath, it sounds like a great idea. If you can heave this stone, it'll do much damage, but it almost sounds haphazard from the Tanakh perspective, that this, maybe, right, this one woman happens to throw down this Pelach Rechev, and it hits none other than Avimelech in the head. The Pelach Rechev is described, right, the word Pelach, the Mitzudot Sion defines as an Evan Harechayim, which means the stone of a mill, and the word Rechev means like almost, we use it to the extent like someone riding or driving, meaning I don't know much about millstones, but the concept is that the bottom stone almost stays put, and the top stone rolls over the top stone. Some type of, they've made it round a little bit. It's on a stick of some sort where you could push it. So you put the grain in, and then the heavy stone rolls over. So the one that's moving, that's the rechev. So she, now, why she threw that and not the bottom one? Who knows? But it gets thrown onto his head. And this is what I had alluded to before in terms of a mida keneged mida. But if you recall way back when he, back in the very beginning of this parak, when he came to his fellow brothers, it says that vayarog es achav b'nei Yerubal shivim ish al even achas. One stone. Even achas. Right? So you hear it. He was killed. He killed his brothers al even achas. And now in this pasuk, you even have that word. Maybe you didn't say it's a little bit strange. Why vatashlich isha achas pelach rechev? It should just say vatashlach isha pelach. Why isha achas? Maybe it's some type of poetic language of the Tanakh, having the word achas and having it be a stone. And that's almost a midah keneged midah. He killed his brothers on the stone. And then it's a stone. We'll see, it's not the stone that puts him to death, but it clearly causes his death to happen. Pasuk Nundalid. Vayikra Mehira El Hanar Nosei Chilav. He calls out quickly to the Nar, the young man, Nosei Chilav, who was his attendant, who was his arms bearer, who carried his wares. Vayomer Lo, and he said to him, Shalof Charbacha Umosaseni. Draw your sword and put me to death. Pen Yomru Li Isha Haragasu. Lest they say about me that this woman killed me. Vayitkirehu na'aro vayamos. So vayitkirehu, which is a language of piercing the body, his na'aro, his attendant, pierced him with a sword, vayamos, and he died. Not very woke. Not very woke at all. I wonder if he's saying, Pen yomruli isha haragasu, lest people say about me that this woman killed me. Is it that he means particularly a woman as opposed to a man? Is it that it's not happening in the realm of battle, in the sense that when you're decked out as a soldier and you're on the battlefield and, you know, I don't know, you end up one-on-one with a fellow soldier, and only one soldier can win. There's some pride to some extent if you lose to a soldier.
Right.
As opposed to here, he's losing to an Isha. He's losing to a non-soldier. It could very well be that it does mean Isha, and that we know from the Tanakh perspective that women are not in the army. and that women are not known to be fighters. And so therefore, it could be a little bit more derogatory from his, right, for his, quote-unquote, his honor. The Nar kills him, which, you know, again, you have to put it together, this Vataritz es Gulgalto in the previous Pasuk, that he received such a head injury, but he's definitely conscious enough that he could be expressing that's a pretty coherent thought. What are people, he's worried about his legacy. You know, we would, in that moment, it seems like the last thing that he needs to worry about. It could very well be that he was able to judge the situation and he understood there was no way that he's going to survive this. You know, without, you know, I guess whatever medicine was at that time, he could have seen that this is not, I'm only going to live a few more hours. I may as well end my life. that's not considered to be proper. As far as I've seen quoted, he's not criticized for this decision in terms of ending his life early, because the list of things that we would be critical for Avimelech, this is the last thing that we're going to, I mean, this is a man who just murdered men, women, children. He murdered his own 69 of his own half-brothers, and he usurped power over all of Israel. It happened to be that he also chose to end, you know, to end his own life. The Art Scroll footnote wanted to draw a distinction, because one could put a parallel to the story that happens with Shaul at the end of Shaul's life. The end of, right, it's Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis have a commonality in that the last chapter in Shmuel Aleph and the first chapter in Shmuel Beis are almost the same thing. It's definitely a little bit of a question which gets dealt with in terms of why it seems to repeat. But there was a war with the Plishtim. Shaul has to be punished. And the Plishtim basically give him a blow that will lead to his death. And Shaul asks an attendant of his to end his life so that it won't be a disgrace for the Jewish people. So that as the nation will not have a stain on them that the Plishtim killed their leader. There was an aspect of the Plishtim taking Shaul's body and his son's body and putting on display. Eventually it gets saved, and eventually they get a proper kvura. But there isn't an idea of, by Shaul, it was saving the honor of Klal Yisrael, and that's how you could possibly understand that. Sorry, again, he was on his way to die. And here, it's a self-preservation. He's not the properly recognized king of, and he doesn't even put it in that perspective. He doesn't say, you know, lest the people be known for having a ruler that was killed in such a disgraceful manner. He puts it all himself. Pen yomru li, they're going to say it about me. Avimelech gets his due, right? What Yosam had predicted was that the fire was going to come forward from Avimelech. So maybe that's it, right? The mashal from Yosam was that a fire was going to come out. So a fire did come out from Avimelech and consume the people of Shechem. Why the same mashal is used, that the fire is going to come forward from Shechem and going to consume Avimelech? It wasn't a fire, it was through a stone. And it's almost rather innocent in a certain sense. Pasuk Nunhei. Vayiru ish Yisrael kimeis Avimelech. So Klal Yisrael saw that Avimelech is dead. Vayelchu ishlam kamo. Everyone goes back home. I mean, in a sense that this whole the recent mini war that took place was all on Avimelech's head. It was all Avimelech fighting against this rebelliousness based on the fact that he's the leader. But now it's almost like we go back to business as usual, which is there is no king. And ish limkomo, everyone goes back to their place. Everyone is their own. Everyone's in their own domain. This spiritual state of the people is not so proper. But it's, you know, no one, and you could maybe understand why no one else is running to take the reins of leadership necessarily. It didn't work out well for Avimelech.
But you wouldn't be surprised at this point if the youngest brother came back and said, I'm representing all my brothers.
So yeah, right. So Yosam never comes back on the scene, which it is what it is, and maybe he wasn't powerful enough to do such a thing. maybe he actually, you know, we had in his speech, he mentioned God once. He mentioned Elohim once. Maybe it was that he wasn't tapped to be leader. He wasn't asked of it. And so he doesn't even step into the I told you so. He doesn't even come out and say like, look, I predicted it and it happened. He doesn't come out and bow again. There's no encore. He goes into hiding and we never hear of him again. Pasuk Nun Vav is almost the capstone pasuk. Vayashav Elokim Esras Avimelech. Hashem had returned or repaid the evil of Avimelech. Asher Asa La'aviv, that he had done to his own father, Laharog Eshivim Echav, to kill his 70 brothers. Pasuk Nun Zayin, the Es Kol Ras Anshe Shechem, and also the evil of the people of Shechem, Heshev Elokim Berosham, Hashem returned, Hashem paid it back upon their heads, Vatavo Alehem Kivlas Yosam Ben Yerubal, and the curse of Yosam Ben Yerubal came upon them. Most likely, we should read the pasuk by looking at right under the last pasuk in the parak Nun Zayin. So where the semi-pause in the pasuk is under the word Berosham. So we would read the pasuk Ves Kol Ras Anshe Shechem Heshiv Elokim Berosham, that Hashem had paid back the evil that Anshe Shechem had done. They were the ones who had coronated and gave power to Avimelech, and that's almost. Because then we read Vatavo Alehem at Kilalas Yosam Ben Yerubal. It's actually going not only on the first half of this pasuk, but most likely it's referring to the previous pasuk as well, because it was the Kilalas Yosam, it was the curse of Yosam, the son of Yerubal, that went ahead. It didn't only affect the people of Shechem, but it also affected Avimelech, and so that's the totality. Why it is that his curse gets to be the right that almost it sounds right that. Hashem is clearly involved, right? In both Pasuk Nun Vav and Pasuk Nun Zayin, it's clear, the Tanakh is clear, that the payment and the revenge, quote-unquote, is coming from God, maybe on behalf of Gidon, on behalf of the 69 that were killed. But this Yosam ben Yerubal, he gets one last praise, that it was his curse. It was his curse that did it. Again, why he necessarily kind of deserved that, if not so clear, but the process of Avimelech getting what he was deserving, and the people of Shechem getting what they were deserving, and the belief in reward and punishment seems to come to fruition, and it concludes the parak. Somehow, some way, we turn the corner, and the next five psukim are extremely positive. And they represent a long period of history, relatively long period of history. Pasuk Perek Yud, Pasuk Aleph. Vayakam acharei Avimelech. And he arose after Avimelech, Lahoshia es Yisrael, to save Yisrael. Tola ben Pua ben Dodo ish Yisachar. A person by the name of Tola, a shofet, we would call him a shofet, Book of Shoftim. His name is Tola, the son of Pua, the son of Dodo, a man from the tribe of Yisachar, who Yoshev Bashamir, he lives in Shamir, the Har Ephraim, which is, or next to, Har Ephraim. Where he came from, no idea. I mean, yeah, besides biographical information, but where, it's like out of left field. He came Lohoshia es Yisrael, which we have to kind of put in some words that are missing. The Jewish people must have been deserving of him to save. There may be an aspect of that, which the Mefarshim kind of debate a little bit, and the Radak explains that Avimelech, even given the fact that Avimelech was as bad as he was, during those 3 years, from a military perspective, he had put the Jews in a continued good position. And then this Tola kind of continues that, while other Mefarshim understand, no, it's specifically Vayakam Acharei Avimelech. Avimelech did not provide necessarily positivity for the nation, and therefore this Tola is taking on that role of Hoshias Israel, which means that the Jews are deserving of such, which likely means that there's some type of spiritual component that's present, because that's what we've seen until this point. The only way that they have peace and tranquility is if they are no longer serving Avodah Zarah and they're in line with their spiritual responsibilities. He's from Yisachar, but he lives in Har Ephraim. He maybe is trying to live among the people, not just of his tribe. He may have been a shofet, as we'll see. The next pasuk actually says it straight. He was likely the quasi, whatever it is, the quasi political leader and spiritual leader, not just of his tribe Yisachar, but way beyond. And therefore, Har Ephraim is where he makes his place of dwelling. Pasuk Beis. Vayishbor es Yisrael esrim v'shalosh shana. He judges Israel for 23 years. Vayamas vayikaver b'shamir. He dies. He's buried in Shamir. 23 years of peace, of tranquility. It sounds great, and we get two psukim about it, which is, you know, kind of, again, it's a comfort in the sense that 23 years of things going well, of there being a shofet who's guiding the people, but we don't hear about the details. The Tanakh, from the Tanakh's perspective, maybe you say, like, this is how it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be so eventful. It's supposed to be Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, following the Torah, bringing Karbanos in Shiloh, worshiping Hashem, and no front page news. Just going with it, going with the right.
It's the biggest compliment is two sentences means you did everything right.
You did everything right. Two sentences. You did everything right. And you know, kind of that, you know, that feeling of, you know, sometimes we, you know, it's obviously very separate because here we're Lahavdo, there was real turmoil. But then, you know, in the last 2 years, you've heard a lot of people using phrases like they just want something to be regular. They just want something to be normal. That wouldn't be. You know, it's not exciting. Just regular is already something to aim for and to shoot for. So that was achieved. And then the Pasuk Gimel, maybe with one more Pasuk, this time it's three Pasukim, we hear of a successive period, which is also something great. Because we haven't, at least in the description of the Navi, it hasn't been like that. It keeps going up and down, up and down. There seems to be like an extension. Because Pasuk Gimel says, "Vayakom acharav," and he rose after him, Ya'ir HaGiladi. Ya'ir HaGiladi. Gilad is from the tribe of Menashe. And his name's Ya'ir, which we'll see and we'll make reference to. It's a famous name within the tribe of Menashe, but most likely not the most famous. But the pasuk is clear in saying Vayakam acharav, he arose after him. It almost sounds like there's some type of succession of leadership. Now it's not a dynasty. That path didn't work. We're not at the kings. We're at Shoftim, and we're having now. Was there a relationship? Is this a Rebbe student? Is this some type of kin? We got nothing in terms of. It's just telling us, Vayakom acharav Ya'ir HaGiladi, Vayishbor es Yisrael, he judged the Jewish people, Esrim Ushtayim Shana, 22 years, which when we put it together, we now have a year, a period about, right, 23 plus 22, 45 years of peace, of tranquility. We're told about him, a description in Pasuk Dalet, Vayihilo Shloshim Banim, he had 30 sons, which obviously much less impressive than Gidon. Gidon had 70. This is just 30. Slacker, you know? Rochvim al shloshim ayarim. An ayar is a type of animal, a type of horse. So they rode on 30 horses. Ushloshim ayarim. It's almost like a play on the word for here. I mean city, and specifically a city that's not fortified. They had 30 cities. Lahem yikru Chavos Ya'ir. These cities were called the Chavos Ya'ir, the villages, the towns, the dwelling places of Ya'ir, ad hayom hazeh, until today, meaning when Shmuel Hanavi is writing it. Asher be'eretz Gilad, that is in Gilad. What is the significance of telling us this? I'm not 100% sure, unless it's a window into the success. It's a window into the success of the family, of Yair, that he was prominent, that his sons are all, you know, in charge of villages. And then we hear Pasuk Hey, Vayamas Yair. Yair dies, Vayikaver Bekamon, and he's buried in Kamon. The term, the Radak is, he picks up on the fact that in the tribe of Menashe, there is a famous name, and the name is Yair. We hear about Yair being a descendant of Menashe in the Torah itself, and that when they came in, right, when it was Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, they took hold in the Eiver HaYarden, in the Transjordan. We already hear of someone named Yair, and we even hear of there being towns that were known as the Chavos Yair, the villages of Yair. And the Radak says it straight, that it would be quite a davar tema, quite a wonder. He'd be over 300 years old if it was the same individual. So there are once in a while where we try to play such a type of miracle card. The Radak doesn't. He basically says it was someone else with the same name. And the fact that it's in the same tribe with the same name, listen, it makes perfect sense. We know that there are prominent families where the names come back. Right? We have in the time of the Mishnah, it gets a little confusing. There's so many Rabban Shimon and Gamliel and the different generations, and then you get them Yehudas, and they keep repeating. They're doing what we do. They're naming after the grandparent, the great grandparent. It's rather common. We don't necessarily see it in many of the characters in Tanakh itself. We don't. Maybe it's not as common. We more see people naming based on occurrences or based on a reality at the time, as opposed to, right, we would have expected maybe if there was a real thing to name after someone. So how come Yaakov doesn't name any of his sons Avraham? It's like, that's most obvious. I don't have an answer to that question other than, you know, it could, you know, in that specific instance of the 12 tribes, there is some level of each tribe needing to have its uniqueness, in the sense that there's this building of Klal Yisrael where there's Avram, there's Yitzchak, there's Yaakov, and then there's the Shvatim that each need to have their own identity, their own flavor. You know, by naming one Avram, that would maybe, you know, kind of, you know, who was, you know, it's definitely a fascinating thing to think about. You know, who was the first individual in Tanakh, or, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily have the first, but yeah, who was the first individual in Tanakh? So there was an occurrence, and I don't know if anyone talks about this, but Avram's grandfather, I believe Terach's father, was named Nahor, and Avram had a brother named Nahor. Was that on purpose? And it almost sounds like yes, but would we want that to be our model? There you have, right? Terach was still an Oved Avodah Zarah, and he's naming, you know, within Tanakh itself, is Yair maybe the first one? Is this the first reoccurring name? Not sure.
But in everything we're reading, I don't see any references to the Mishkan or any services or anything like that, but would that have been still going on? It's just that it's not part of the story.
In terms of, you know, where is Mishkan service? So we have to, our understanding is that once the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh, it ran Keseder. It ran, and that what was going on in Shiloh during all the years that we've had a bunch of decades in slots where the Jews are under duress, where the Jews are under control of a foreign power. Did that affect the Mishkan? Did it not affect the Mishkan? That's an excellent question that the Pesukim clearly have not addressed, which is, you know, maybe, so do we assume that do we assume that everything is fine in the Mishkan until we hear otherwise? I don't know. I don't know the answer. Probably, I don't know if I hinted at this or said it straight. Probably, I have not worked super hard to answer this question. But probably one of the biggest questions I have in Tanakh that I haven't found an answer to yet is that in Sefer Shmuel, when the city of Shiloh is destroyed and the Mishkan no longer functions in Shiloh, and the Mishkan is destroyed to some extent, there is no pasuk that says such a thing. There's no pasuk that explains that the Mishkan is not functional anymore, that the stone walls of the Mishkan, because when the Mishkan moved to Shiloh, it became semi-permanent, meaning the wood that Moshe Rabbeinu had worked on, that was when the Mishkan is traveling, needs to be taken down every who knows how long, right? Throughout the 40 years in the desert, they're in 42 different places. They have to take down that Mishkan, pick it up. They can't be made of stone. It has to be made of wood. And when they come into Eretz Yisrael, the Mishkan is in a place called Gilgal for 14 years. Still, it's in a transient type, right? Klal Yisrael is conquering the land, the dividing land. But once the Mishkan comes to Shiloh, it becomes permanent. And then there are stone walls. It's a stone, right? They probably had a museum somewhere where they put the wood of Moshe or some storage closet in Shiloh where you could still, at that time, see the wood. I'm not going to get rid of it. It's priceless. But the Mishkan shifted to be stone because it stood there for 369 years. Which means, number one, it was never destroyed. Whether or not the functionality of it was ever stopped during these negative periods, it hasn't been discussed. That is an excellent question that I guess until now I have not formulated out loud, so thank you. And the understanding would be here, definitely, when we're dealing with, let's say, five psukim, which represent 45 years of peace and tranquility, is that the Mishkan was functioning and it was the center place. And again, while the Mishkan was there, that was the only location where karbanos could be brought. And definitely when it came to the communal sacrifices, the karban tamid every day with Kohanim, with Levim, the same way that the Mishkan functioned in the desert and the same way that the Beis HaMikdash eventually functioned in Yerushalayim is the way that the Mishkan functioned in Shiloh. So we have this 45-year period of time, Tola and Ya'ir, and it doesn't go into great... Probably the biggest question you have on this is that in these 45 years is that we didn't at all speak of their spiritual journey that brought about the existence of these shoftim, as the next story, which is going to unfold, is going to bring us back to that classic cycle of negativity, needing to reach out to God, and finally being sent to Savior. Here, we seem to be missing some of those pieces. They're sent to Saviors. It seems to be great. Where was the spiritual journey? So, Be'ez Hashem, next time, we will continue in Perek Yud.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Enjoy this day of spring, this warm weather.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to get a little better.
I know. I'm waiting for that.
It's going to get a little better. This morning, the radio said it was a real feel of 7. And while I was walking in Washington Heights, right near Belfort, it's so windy, I felt it. So. Right. It's March 29th.
Yeah.
Okay, all the best. I don't know how this goes. Did you know this woman? This Miriam Christmas?
Yeah, from Susan.
Last night, Amy texted me about it and made it sound very matter of fact that I would know who she was.
And,
right. That's what I'm getting.
Working there. I mean,